Hello, high school hockey fans, and welcome to another episode of This Week in Wisconsin Prep Hockey. Today is the sectional previews. I am Bill Berg Jr., joined by Bill Berg and Dan Bauer. How are you gentlemen today?
Doing well.
I'm awake.
We'll start in Division Two with Section One. In the regional final, Amory beat Spooner 5-1. Rice Lake beat Whistle Flag 4-0. Hayward beat the Northwest Iceman 7-2, and Ashland beat Shawmigan Phillips Butternut 9-1, setting up sectional semifinals between Amory and Rice Lake, 1-5, and then Hayward and Ashland 3-2.
Yeah, I mean,
Yeah.
I think Amory is the was the favorite, obviously, coming in. I think Rice Lake is kind of the big X factor with their goalie, and that could be interesting against Amory. And then Hayward, I think, is kind of a little bit of a sleeper too, had maybe not the regular season they wanted to, but have played better. So yeah, I mean, I think that one's still pretty interesting. Maybe Rice Lake and Hayward are going to end up meeting after all. They could both pull off upsets and be in the section final.
Yeah, I know from looking at the voting and stuff that we've got going on that all of the coaches over in the western part of the state have a great deal of respect for Rice Lake's goalie, and I should really try to
Hayden Van
remember his
Gilder.
name. Pardon me?
Hayden Van Gilder.
That's him. Yeah, and it looks like he stole a game from Whistle Flag, and now he's got to go up against Amory, which is always a tough order in that section. Amory's just kind of owned that section the last couple of years.
Yeah, they can score for sure. They've got some kids that can put the puck in the net. That'll be the big challenge. I know Rice Lake was suffering through some injuries through the course of the year, and I think are a little bit healthier right now. But yeah, it's that time of the year where goalies they tend to pull off upsets. So that will be I think that'll be an interesting section yet. Good final coming up.
Make a prediction.
I hate making predictions only
Oh.
because I spend a lot of time talking to the coaches, and I don't really want to get on anyone's bad side for not picking them. So I'm going to try to stay away from that if I'm allowed.
Okay. Moving on to section two. Northland Pines beat Rhinelander 10-2. Lakeland beat Shawn Obondwell 3-2 in double overtime. Pacelli beat Anago 2-1, and Mosinee beat Medford 9-2. That sets up Northland Pines number one against number four Lakeland, and number six Pacelli against number two Mosinee.
I was at that game in Anago that Pacelli pulled out the big win. Their goaltender had a heck of a game, stopped 40 some shots and only let in one. And that one was just I was down in the end right in front of me at the time, and the shot came in and he just closed his glove a little bit too quick. The puck hit his glove, and I think he believed he caught it, and it was actually lying on the ice about a foot to his left, and Liam Burt saw it and poked it in. But he had a great, his defense was awesome. They forced all the shots from the outside. He controlled his rebounds very well, and when there was one left out there, his defense made sure that the Anago team couldn't get to it. And then on for the Anago goaltender, it was just one of your worst nightmares. You stand back there leaning against your net while your team has the puck in the other zone, and you watch as they work the puck and work the puck, and the defenseman slowly gets sucked down and caught up in the offense, and boom, here's a puck going the other way. And that's what happened with the first goal. Was a breakaway by Zane Phyllis. We got a great picture of it on the cover page for the write-up we did of the game. Zane Phyllis got they got the puck to him, and he breakaway came down on Martinson, the Anago goalie, and beat him. And we got a lovely email from the aunt of Zane Phillips. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but she nominated him for Player of the Week, which we don't do weekly now. We'll have one player for Division One, Division Two, and girls for a player of the playoffs. And for Zane Phillips to be considered for that, his team's probably going to have to win tonight against Mosinee, and that's a tall order. But we'll keep this in mind. Yeah, Zane's had a tough year. His grandmother died back in, excuse me, just before Christmas unexpectedly. So he's kind of channeled his energy. Excuse me. And yeah, if we consider this, I'll read this again, this whole thing at a later time. But yeah, Amy Jo Johnson wrote this. She's the aunt of Zane Phillips, and she recommended him for Player of the Week. So I'll keep it in mind next week when we're actually picking a player of the playoffs.
And that was
It was a great game.
Pacelli's first playoff win since 2016. They beat Rhinelander 1-0 that year and then lost to Wausau West. So 10 years in the making.
Pines Lakeland, obviously that's going to be Bernard for Lakeland. That's going to be the big X factor there. He has certainly been capable of pulling off big games through the course of the year, but
I mean,
good
he did
luck.
one last week.
Right.
Shawano outshot them 60-31 in that 3-2 overtime win for Lakeland. So he stopped 58 of 60 shots in that game.
Yeah, he's definitely, I mean, Pines has some players that can score and have had a really good year, but this is one of those dangerous games, I think, for Pines, with facing a goaltender like that that has that kind of ability. So, but that's what makes this time of the year so interesting.
And Pines at home is tough to beat. Since they expanded the size of their rink, I think it's mainly only a, maybe probably only a one goal advantage for home ice now. It used to be two. I used to swear they had a two goal advantage every time they played because their rink was so uniquely laid out and with the small neutral zone, and they knew how to play and take advantage of it. But now I still think they have a one goal advantage for that wonderful rink they have up there.
And if it does end up being Pines and Mosinee in the final, they split this year. Pines beat Mosinee 3-2 early in the season. Mosinee outshot them 25-17 in that game, and then Mosinee won the second game 4-2, and Pines outshot Mosinee in that one 35-29. So
And
that could go either way.
Even when Pines had that two-goal advantage on their smaller rink, Mosinee was the one team that I thought could go up there and play evenly with Pines on that rink. They've played enough on that rink that they know how to do it. And if it get yeah, one way or another, I'm going to be at that final. There are only a couple of finals on Saturday. Most of them are Friday, so we're not going to be able to cover as many as we would like to. Because they're all at like nine of them at the same time. So, there's only a couple of us, so we can't get everywhere. But that one is on Saturday, and I'll be up there in Eagle River on Saturday for that.
That first Pines win too, when they won beat Mosinee, they scored with like 5 seconds, I think it was, left in the game to pull that one off. That was a 2-2 game. Looked like it was headed to overtime. So I mean, they're the two games together, they've been very, very tight games.
All right, moving on to Division Two, Section Three. Somerset, number one, beat number eight Viroqua 15-3. Four Baldwin Woodville beat five Marshfield 3-2. Three Menominee beat six Black River Falls 6-3, and two River Falls beat seven West Salem 9-1, setting up one versus four Somerset and Baldwin Woodville, and two versus three River Falls and Menominee.
Yeah, nice clean bracket. Everybody that was the higher the well the lower seed, the higher seed, whatever. The home teams won all the games.
Marshfield played Baldwin really tough. They got down 2-0 early and then came back and tied it up, and Baldwin, netted a goal in the second period to make it 3-2, and there was no scoring in the third. Landon Wienendahl, who was one of our finalists for the Hillebrand Award last year, had a 9:31 in that game, stopping 27 of 29. Baldwin doesn't have the offensive punch this year that they had the last couple of years, so they rely on their goalie more this year. It's going to be a tougher road for them against Somerset.
Yeah, Somerset's got some kids that can score points.
That first meeting, then those Somerset and Baldwin play. Well, they only played once, but in that meeting, Baldwin actually had a 2-1 lead going into the third period of that game. Somerset scored three in the third. Last one was an empty netter. So that first meeting between them was really a close contest. So that score, maybe look at 4-2, maybe think it wasn't that close, but definitely Baldwin was right there through that entire game.
Yeah,
And
in the past, I've always gone over for these sectional finals that a lot of they've been in Amory and Somerset a lot for those two sections. And that part of the state, I mean, that's like half of our Division II teams are over in that little western pocket of the state. And they play very competitive hockey out there. Those kids, I mean, they play against each other all growing up, and they know each other well. It's a nice area, but I don't think I'm going to make it over there this year.
on the other side, River Falls has already beaten Menominee twice. They beat them 7-4 early in the season, out shooting them 39 to or 32 to 29, and then 6-2 later in the season, out shooting them 50-19. Jackson Flanagan had a hat trick in that second contest.
yeah, I mean, they both play such strong schedules throughout the year, playing in the Big Rivers and then the other teams, and they're really battle tested. A really crazy stat for me is River Falls power play during the regular season finished at 51%. I don't think I've ever seen a high school team score on 50% of their power plays. That's got to be a record, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, 25% is normally considered good.
Yeah, pretty good. Yeah, if you're in the 30s, it's great, but I've never seen 51%. I'm gonna have to go back and watch some of their video.
So
Well, I'm bothered
don't
by
take
River
any
Falls.
penalties.
Yeah, don't take any, you're right.
I'm bothered by River Falls because they have a forward named Calvin Vezina, and you shouldn't be a forward if your last name is Vezina. You should be a goalie.
Maybe tried it, didn't like it.
The trophy still got his name on it.
Probably had parents that were smarter than to let him be a goalie,
Yes.
maybe.
All right, moving on to sectional four. Number one, Wanakee beat number eight, Cedarburg, 10-0. Four, Sauk Prairie beat five, Waupun, 3-0. Three, Fond du Lac Springs beat six, Homestead, 5-0. And two, McFarland beat Wapaka, number seven, 7-1. So not only did all the home teams win, but three of the four of them had shutouts. And that sets up number one Wanakee versus number four Sauk Prairie, and number two McFarland versus number three Springs.
Yeah, a lot of separation there in the margins of victory in that section more than any other ones. I figured it out. The average margin of victory in all the games was 5.5 goals. So normally, yeah, a lot of these games are not very tight, and then this section that certainly proved to be true. I think Sauk Prairie Wanakee is like a really interesting. I think they're both really interesting, going to be very competitive matchups. I think this should be pretty exciting to see. Wanakee, I believe, is trying to make their first trip to a state tournament, where the other three have already been there. So they're the only ones I think that have not check that off their program list yet.
And as a local Madison area team, if Wanake does make the state tournament, there'll be a good showing from them. McFarland too.
Yeah, I mean, in McFarland, we saw them last year. Steve Hoang is still their goalie, and he's still really good. Another great season out of him. He kept them in the game against Tomahawk last year, probably far longer than they should have been. He was fantastic. He's got a 926 save percentage this year with a 158 goals against average. So as a team, they're not giving up a lot of goals.
Yeah, and the Wanake and Sauk Prairie did meet earlier in the year, and that was Wanake beat them 2-1, held Sauk Prairie to 15 shots on goal. So that rematch, of course, Sauk Prairie has the revenge factor, the lower seed factor. They got a lot of that good underdog stuff working for them. So I think that that will be a great game. I think they're both going to be really, really great games.
The only one of these teams that Springs has played is Wanake. They've skated to a 2-2 tie back on January 3rd. Shots were 31-30, so it was a very evenly played game. But otherwise, Springs has not seen McFarland or Sauk Prairie this year. All right, moving on to the girls. Section one. Where'd I go? The number four seed Wisconsin Valley Union lost to the number five seed Northern Pines Eagles 4-3. And the three seed Hayward beat the six seed Medford 17-0. That sets up number one Central Wisconsin Storm against number five Northern Pines Eagles. And number two Superior versus number three Hayward Hurricanes.
Yeah, the Pines upset was a pretty significant upset. I think Wisconsin Valley been playing pretty well down the stretch, and I saw them play a couple different times in February, I think, and I was pretty impressed with the improvement they've made throughout the season. And but that was again that kind of the case of the hot goaltender, and Lucy Nowak showed up and did what she does best, which is stop the puck. And lo and behold, an upset was born, and went to overtime. Just a good game. The Hayward Medford game, I got no comment on that. I don't understand that, but it happens, and I've done it myself. But yeah, I hate to see those kind of scores, but does set up some interesting matchups. Nowak against Central Wisconsin. That will be a good challenge, and they played during the regular season. Both those games, I believe, were 3-1. Both of them were close, so she has shown that ability. And if you can keep Yurkowski and Kelter off the board, you have a chance against Central Wisconsin, I believe. And of course, Hayward Superior. I mean, they play each other, seems like all the time, and that will should also be another great game. That'll be their third time they meet this year too.
Yeah, Pines has lost to the Storm twice, 3-1. They lost to Hayward 2-0. They had a game against Superior canceled. I'm going to assume that was weather. So they've been right in there in all of them. They just don't have the punch to get over the top so far.
About that Hayward Medford game, 17-0. It should be noted that Hayward scored 11 goals in the first period, and then backed off and only scored three in the second and three in the third. But yeah, you don't. Well, you've been on lopsided game. You don't back off in the first period. You play the first period. So 11 goals in that period, then they backed off and just kind of cruised through the rest of the game.
Yeah, it's hard to see those. I've been on both ends of them, and honestly, if you ask most coaches, they don't like being on either side. But yeah, they do happen. But the Superior Hayward matching up again. That should be a pretty good contest. Superior's without their number one goalie. She's been out for quite a while now, over a month, I think like 6 weeks. So last year they went into the playoffs. They didn't have Benson, who was their second leading scorer. And so now this year they're heading to the playoffs again without a key part of their team. But it'll come down, I think, to Adelyn Benson and McKenna Hutchinson in net for Hayward, and that'll be kind of a standoff between those two. If Benson can get some pucks past her, Superior probably has a good chance to win. And if McKenna can shut her down, I think Hayward has a chance. Hayward struggles to put the puck in the net. That's their biggest downfall. So, but it sets up to be a pretty interesting game.
Yeah, I'll be at the other one. Brett and I will be doing excuse me, a doubleheader tonight at Marathon Park. So we'll be at the Central Wisconsin Storm versus Pines Eagles game at 5:30 or 5 o'clock tonight.
All right, moving on to section two. Number five, Hudson beat number four, Black River Falls, 3-2. Number three, Western Wisconsin Stars beat number six, Chippewa Falls Menominee, 4-1. And number two, Eau Claire Area Stars beat number seven, Coulee Region Cyclones, 7-1. Setting up one versus five, St. Croix Valley Fusion versus Hudson. And two versus three, Eau Claire Area Stars versus Western Wisconsin Stars.
Yeah, I was at the Hudson Black River Falls game last week, and that was really entertaining game. Kind of set up, looked like it was going to be things were going to be set up for Black River. Like they like them. They managed to get themselves a 2-1 lead early in the third period on a shorthanded goal after they had not played great, honestly, the first period. They did not play well at all. Hudson showed up with just flying and outshot them 12-1 in that first period, but got out of there with a scoreless tie. And then Cameron Steele scored that shorthanded goal 5 minutes into the third, and they're up 2-1. And they're normally pretty darn good at locking the game down defensively, and it looked like that was going to indeed happen. And then kind of a routine play with just over 2 minutes to play. Yeah, their defenseman's dragging a puck back across the blue line, their own blue line, getting ready to make a regroup pass. And when she goes to let the pass go, basically just fanned on it, just barely went over the top of the puck. The puck dribbled away, and the forechecker for Hudson, right on top of that puck, jumped on top of it, attacked the net, and scored. Kind of caught, I think, the goaltender a little bit by surprise at the way that that happened. And suddenly it was a 2-2 game. And then I don't know if it was the shock of that goal, but like 53 seconds later, they scored again on really kind of a similar play, only this time the defenseman just took herself out of the middle of the ice. With the sweep check, let the forward cut back to the middle. And they ended up scoring again. And they got away with a 3-2, I think a shocking win. I think Black River was pretty stunned when the game was over. But yeah, they got out of there with a 3-2 win and moving on. So.
And haven't Western Wisconsin and Eau Claire played each other like 12 times this year?
It feels like those, that feels kind of like the boys part of that, the section, the boys D2. I feel like they all play each other a lot through the course of the year. I don't think that many times, but yeah, there's definitely very familiar with each other for sure. I know the coaching staff's just talking a little bit to Matt Cranston at St. Croix
Did
Valley. I know he has a ton of respect for what Matt does with Hudson, and I know that Hudson is a team that everyone fears comes playoff time. They play a really tough schedule, but come playoff time, they seem to be able to get things heading in the right direction. So that should be a great game in Baldwin. And then Western and Eau Claire Altoona. Of course, Eau Claire was kind of the Cinderella team last year with all their overtime victories. Wound up going to the state tournament with Bob Stowe on their first year as their coach. And yeah, I think these are going to be two outstanding games, and we could see some overtime out of one or both.
Yeah, Eau Claire and Western Wisconsin split their two games. Shots in both games were 24-23 in favor of Western Wisconsin, but one shot difference isn't really a big deal. Eau Claire won the first one 3-1. Western Wisconsin won the second one 3-2. So that should be a probably a 3-1 or a 3-2 game here tonight. Moving on to section three, the number four Fond du Lac Warbirds lost to the number five Fox City Stars 3-1. The number three Lakeshore Lightning beat the number six Arrowhead Warhawks 7-0. And the number two USM Wildcat Co-op beat the Brookfield Glacier number seven 3-1. So that was two close games and then one not close game. That sets up the Bay Area Ace Bears number one taking on number five Fox Cities and number two USM Co-op taking on number three Lakeshore Lightning.
Yeah, I think the Fox Cities Bay Area sets up to be a pretty interesting. They just played a couple weeks ago, and Bay Area beat Fox Cities 2-1. When you looked at Bay Area last year, the way they closed out the season, they absolutely were just ripping people down the stretch. I think they won their last five or six games last year by like a 25-3 count. And this year they've been in some very tough games. They went to overtime with the Storm. They got beat by Eau Claire a little while back, and then the 2-1 game with Fox City. So they have not seemed to have been to be nearly as dominant at this point compared to a year ago. And I think Fox Cities is playing really well. I think they've settled on Tegan Wilkins as their goalie. And she made 35 saves against Bay Area when they lost 2-1. So I think that should be an exciting game. And I don't know, Fox Cities, they definitely with Mersa and they have two kids that can really put the puck in the net. Margaret Thomas, the other one. So I mean, I think that sets up to be a really interesting and exciting game. And then U School and Lakeshore, they'll meet for the third time. And U School owns both wins over Lakeshore coming into this one. For some reason, they've kind of had their number this year. So it'll be interesting to see if Lakeshore has that motivation of, getting beat twice, or, the old theory that it's so hard to beat a team three times in one year. So I've never believed in that or never subscribed to that as a coach. I always when kids would I would hear people say that, I said, why should it be hard to beat them three times? We already beat them twice. Should be
Yeah,
easy
if
to
you've
beat
already
them three
beaten them
times.
twice, the third
Yeah.
time really is no,
So yeah,
I
has
did
no
the math
magical
on it.
powers.
I did the math on it a couple of years ago. I looked at like 10 years of scores. And the team that wins the first two wins the third one like 83% of the time or something like that.
I believe that. I just, yeah, I
But
never.
that one out of five chance that they lose it is the one everybody says it's harder to beat a team three times.
Yeah, which seems to be not true. But yeah, that's a pretty interesting. Lakeshore's kind of come of age this year. Really a pretty young team for the most part. A lot of their players that they depend on put the puck in the net are pretty young, and they've really improved and gotten better as the season goes along. And same with University School. I think from the beginning of the year to now to the end, they have improved a lot. And that should be a really good game.
You mentioned that, Bay Area was beating people up at the end of last season, and this season they're playing a lot more close games. Obviously, Julianne Bradford and Emily Bill both graduated, and they made up the top line with Faye Brunke last year, I believe. Last year, Brunke was their leading scorer with 46 points. This year, she's down to 36, without Bradford and Bill out there with her. Hannah Von Hayden is basically the same point total she had last year. Addison Dahl is basically the same point total she had last year. Ava McDonald's got a couple more this year. Aisling Buchan has moved up quite a bit. She's basically doubled her point total from last year. But overall, the loss of Bradford and Bill means that the Ice Bears are still a great team, but they're not the dominant force that they were last year.
Yeah, it's definitely affected Brunke, I think, and I don't know how it couldn't. I mean, those two were both goal scorers, and Bradford was probably more known for setting people up than maybe putting the puck in the net. So yeah, that's definitely been a big difference, which I think has, taken them down a notch, not quite as, like I said, dominant as they were a year ago. And then they also lost Tiana Stint, a defenseman last year, who was a senior, who I think was a really unsung important part of that team a year ago, and I think they probably miss her a little bit this year also.
All right, moving on to section four. The number four Madison Metro Lynx beat the number five Icebergs 5-0. The six Badger Lightning beat number three Janesville 4-2. And the two Cap City Cougars beat Viroqua 13-0. That sets up number four Madison Metro going to number one Beaver Dam, and number two Cap City hosting number six Badger Lightning.
Yeah, I think the Badger Lightning, obviously, that was an upset that I don't think too many people saw coming. Janesville had really been playing well, but they went in there and got it done. I know Janesville was without their starting goalie, who was at a wrestling in the wrestling finals to go to the state tournament. She also wrestles and is a goalie. And didn't show, wasn't able to get there till the start of the third period. So I know that that maybe had a little bit of an effect on their team. When your number one goalie's not there, you do sometimes play a little bit different. But hats off to Badger Lightning for, it hasn't been a great season for them, but found a way to get it done and, moves on now to play a really strong Cap City team that really, has some players that can score and a very solid goaltender. Metro Lynx to Beaver Dam. They've already played twice this year. Beaver Dam owns both wins in that. They beat them 5-1 and 2-1. But the shots on goal in the two games combined was Beaver Dam 51-45, which is pretty close. Addie Bazell has that ability to really steal a game for the Metro Lynx, and I think they are another team that has been playing a lot better. Maybe not seen it in their one loss record, but I did see them play Janesville later in the year, and I thought they played a really good game against them that night and lost in overtime. So there, I think Bazell has the chance to steal it for them. And, Beaver Dam has had another back-to-back great year, won the Badger Conference again, have the state's leading scorer in Brenna Rhodes. So that will be, Rhodes against Bazell maybe is the matchup to watch in this game.
I'm looking at the Janesville Badger Lightning game, and I see that Piper Aker played the first two periods, and Jesse Demarassi played the third period. At 0 minutes and 0 seconds of the third period, a penalty is listed that says substitution infraction.
Yes, I asked their coach about that. And so what happened was when they found out that she, their goaltender, I think it's DeMarcay, I think is how it was pronounced, was going to be in the state final or the finals to go to the state tournament for wrestling. So then they scratched her, they crossed her off the roster at the beginning of the game. Then she showed up for the third period. They didn't know if she was going to make it, so she makes it, and they put her in the game without, I guess, anyone thinking about that or whatever. And so then they got a penalty for an illegal, what was it? Illegal
Substitution infraction is how it's listed on
substitution
here, but
infraction. Yeah, that was strange, not But I guess it happens, huh?
Yeah. Got confused there for a second. All right, and then moving on back to the boys for Division One. In Section One, the Section of Death, a couple different games here. Tomahawk beat Eau Claire and then lost to Hudson 8-6 in what was a fantastic game. Eau Claire Memorial beat Wisconsin Rapids. Superior beat Wausau East Merrill United. And then Superior beat Eau Claire Memorial 5-2. So that's the four seed moving all the way back up. Spash beat Chippewa Falls after Chippewa Falls beat Regis Altoona McDonald. And Wausau West beat New Richmond after New Richmond beat DC Everest. Wausau West required overtime in that win over New Richmond. But in the end, we do get 1, 2, 3, and 4 lining up in the sectional semifinals in Section One.
Yeah, I was at the excuse me, I was at the DC Everest New Richmond game, and New Richmond played inspired hockey, and the Evergreens did not. I hadn't seen them play much this year, even though they're right over there. I didn't get too many games, but yeah, New Richmond was just buzzing the net. They were just having their way with Griffin Bunnell, the DC Everest goalie. They would put the puck on net and they would just crash, and a couple of passes here and there. The Everest guys just did not seem too intent on breaking up the little passing game that New Richmond was pulling in that game. And they scored 5 times on Bunnell, which I didn't think would happen. And then they carried that momentum into the Wausau West game, and came close to upsetting the second seeded Warriors too. Richmond was, like I say, they're playing inspired hockey and really, taking this second season seriously and gave it a really good run.
I watched most of the Hudson Tomahawk game on stream, and when I turned it on, Hudson had a 4-1 lead and was out shooting Tomahawk like 24-6. And I'm like, well, that's not going very well. And then a couple minutes later, Jett Riley scored a beautiful goal, sort of like Matt Boldy's goal in the gold medal game, where he just flew through two defensemen who kind of waved at him feebly. And then he beat the goalie to make it 4-2. And I'm like, all right, 4-2 is a respectable score. That's pretty good. Then Hudson answered right back. And then with 7 seconds left in the second period, Cole Peterson, from Tomahawk's less scoring second line, potted a goal to make it 5-3. And then Tomahawk came out just on fire to start the third period. Braden Lehmer scored 15 seconds in. Jonah Dickens scored 3 minutes later. Jonah Dickens scored again 4 minutes after that. And all of a sudden, Tomahawk is up 6-5 on Hudson. And they held that lead for 7.5 minutes until Hudson tied it up at 14:34 with a power play goal. And then they added another goal. Kind of a heartbreaking goal to see when you're a goalie. There's not a lot you can do. It was a shot that missed the pipe on the near side, hit the boards behind the net, and flew out on the other side straight onto somebody's stick. And if you're a goalie in that situation, you're kind of screwed. He put it in, and then they added the empty netter at the end. But yeah, until 14:34 of the third period, like, I thought Tomahawk was ready to pull the upset. It was a lot of fun to watch. They got outshot a lot in the first period, 21-5, 15-6 in the second. Third period, they were shot for shot even with Hudson, 7-7. Tiny little school. It was a hell of a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, I have to join the ranks of people who owe Tomahawk an apology. I mean, I know the WIA owes them an apology, and the sectional seating people owe them an apology. But I said, yeah, if Tomahawk did beat Eau Claire North, they'd have no chance against Hudson, and I was about as wrong as a guy can be there. Brett was the game started later than the game that Brett and I were at, and he had the game on his phone streaming, and I don't know the I talked about, different classes of penalties last time, the clear and obvious penalties that got in everybody. I mean, when there's an interference penalty with 3 minutes left in a one goal game, you hope it was an obvious penalty and not some, this guy got in somebody else's way and, so we called interference on him. But yeah, I mean, I didn't think Tomahawk could stay with Hudson for three periods, and Tomahawk got stronger as the game went on. So I was once again way off. Hats off to Tomahawk. They gave it everything they had, I believe.
Yeah, I mean,
Yeah.
if there was any team or any coach that I had met that I knew was not going to allow this being pushed to D1 to change anything about his how he approached it, it was Dewey Riley and Tomahawk. And I just know that he just from the day that they got that word, he just went to their team and they were just like, you know what, that's the way it is, and we got to deal with it, and we're gonna. You know, we're gonna get ourselves ready to compete. And yeah, it's amazingly that they could have their best period in a game like that be the third period, where I'm sure the pace was intense and their bench is a little bit shorter than Hudson's for sure. And you know, for Hudson, you know, that's a tough spot to be in too, because you know, everyone's like, well, you can't lose to a 9 seed. Like, that's ridiculous. You're the number one seed. And then all of a sudden, you know, the game is close and then it's tied and then you're behind. Like, the panic, you know, has to start to set in a little bit. If you're Hudson, you're like, oh my gosh, like, we can't lose to these guys. So, yeah, I mean, just what a great game for the people that were there, and a great game for Tomahawk. I mean, hats off to them again. For like a terrific season, and unfortunate because you know they should be playing in some game in the D2 here to go to state instead of at home right now.
Yeah, and I mentioned to Burglar, not on the podcast, just in a regular conversation last week, that I thought of the top three teams in that section, Hudson, Wausau West, and Spash, Hudson was the best matchup for Tomahawk, and the game did not turn out at all how I expected that matchup to go, because I said of those three teams, Hudson has the least explosive offense and the best defense. And then somehow the game ended up 8-6 with the least explosive offense and the best defense. Sometimes things don't work right. And the other side, Spash and Wausau West are playing. Burglar will be at that one. It's the rubber match between the two teams. Spash beat up West pretty good the first time they played, and then West came back and beat him. I think it was 4-2 the second time they played.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there again, you look at that bracket, like, same thing, kind of kudos to New Richmond for being a 10th seed and going in and taking the number two seed to overtime. You know, that section is just so unbelievably strong when you can have, you know, a 10 seed who almost made it to the semifinals and a 9 seed that almost made it to the semifinals. I think that says a lot about the depth, number one, and number two, probably that seeding process was a little bit off the mark.
I think the loss in the regional final will send New Richmond back to Division Two next year. I think their point total will drop below the threshold. Tomahawk will have another year in Division One, though.
Yeah, they need to fix that formula. That needs to be stretched out longer, I think. Like, or there just needs to be a clause in there that says if we're the smallest team in the state, we just get stay at two if we win every year.
So that's section one. The top three teams in the state and the most championship winning team in state history are your 1, 2, 3, and 4. Moving on to sectional two. Nina, number one seed, will take on four Fox Cities. Nina beat West Bend 8-0, and West Bend had beaten Oshkosh 3-2. Fox Cities beat Sheboygan 5-3, and Sheboygan had beaten Manitowoc United 9-0. In the bottom, the number 2 seed, DePere Voyageurs, take on the number 6 seed, Bay Area Storm. DePere beat Fond du Lac Cardinals 7-2, and Fond du Lac had beaten Beaver Dam 6-1. And Bay Area beat Notre Dame Academy, finally for them, 2-1. Bay Area was at the 6 seed, so they beat Appleton United 12-0 in the first round. And I looked it up. That's the first time Notre Dame has failed to get out of the regional round since 2009.
Yeah, I don't know. I have mixed emotions about that Ashwaubenon co-op and how that came to be and why that came to be, but is what it is. But I think DePere's a team that a lot of people have kind of written off or maybe don't think they're as good as I think they just might be. And Neenan Fox Cities, that'll be their, I think, third meeting, correct? And Nina's won the first two, so here we go. Can you beat him for a third time?
Yeah, Nina beat them in their regular conference matchup and then beat them in the championship game of the Badgerland tournament. So Fox Cities has some scoring power, but Nina's just a solid team. I saw them play Wausau West, and they outplayed West, but Julian Scalcucci had a heck of a game for Wausau West. And DePoit scored a couple of goals late in that game to put West ahead. But good solid games, both of these games coming up. Nina and Fox Cities, Bay Area Storm and DePere. Kind of an overlooked sectional for us. We don't really get over there very often, so we don't see these teams a lot personally, but four solid teams facing off over there.
I was talking to Chris Learman, the broadcaster for the Bay Area Storm, formerly the Bayport Pirates, and he was talking. We were talking about how after the game, several of the Ashwaubenon contingent of the Bay Area Storm said they had never had a hockey game experience like that. Like, they weren't on the ice for the last several years of Bayport versus Notre Dame. So to be on the ice and have that crowd in a full Cornerstone Community Center, they'd never had anything like that before. And then to beat Notre Dame, like, it's Christmas and their birthday wrapped up all at once. Yeah, that was a big one for them, and I think they're a good team. Whether they can get past a peer remains to be seen, but this should be a good one.
And Nina, I think, or Nina, when you look at them, they've gone through the majority of this year without maybe what some people would say was their best hockey player, and Zynda being out since early in the year, so that was a big loss for them that they have recovered from.
Yep, and they're the ones that knocked off Spash, I believe, for the first time this year. Spash's first loss, I think, was to Nina, and their second loss was to Hudson, and their third was to West. Spash came back and avenged that loss, but Nina is still they beat what was at the same time the number one team in the state, so that's pretty good. Bay Area, for their part, they are now in that dangerous position of having the huge emotional letdown. Where you win a game that means that much, that you've been working that many years for, where you kind of come out and drop a stinker in the next one. So their coaches are really going to have to be on top of them going into that game tonight. Right, moving on to Section 3. Section 3, number 1 Madison Edgewood takes on number 5 Onalaska Lacrosse. Madison Edgewood beat Aquinas 7-0, and Aquinas had previously beaten Madison West 2-0. Onalaska beat Verona 3-1, and the South Central Navigators 12-0. On the bottom side, number 2 Sun Prairie takes on number 3 Monona Grove. Sun Prairie beat Middleton 5-1. Middleton had beaten RWD 6-4, and Monona Grove beat Madison Memorial 7-0. Madison Memorial had beaten Toma 4-2. So 1, 2, 3, and 5 in this one.
Big win for Onalaska, I think, for them to get to this point. They had a really good season, but I don't think they got very much respect throughout the course of the year. They kind of did a lot of that below the radar, so to speak. So I'm exciting for them to get the opportunity to play Edgewood, which of course Edgewood has had another tremendous year and is the defending state champ. So that'll be interesting. And then I think Monona Grove and Sun Prairie, also kind of two teams a little bit under the radar throughout the course of the year, both had really good seasons from a one loss standpoint, but didn't get a lot of recognition in the as the top, group of 10 teams in the state. So Edgewood's got to be the favorite for sure coming out of there, but some teams with a lot to prove should make for an interesting couple of games.
I probably shouldn't say it, but I will anyway. We both this section and in the girls Madison area section, they both seem to be like the weakest sections in each group, and I don't know what happened to hockey in the Madison area. We talked about what happened to hockey in Appleton and the Fox Valley. But I mean, Madison used to rule the roost in terms of hockey in Wisconsin. I mean, trickle down from the Badgers. I mean, Madison Memorial and Madison East. I mean, they had some, and Verona was tough for a excuse me, for a long time. Those schools just don't seem to dominate hockey the way they used to. I don't know if they just don't have as many hockey players down in the Madison area anymore. I mean, we have several, teams head to co-op. What used to be Madison East merged with La Follette, and now they've merged with Poinette and DeForest. And I don't know what happened to hockey in the Madison area. It used to be a dominant area, and it's just kind of an also ran section now. It's like, we got to send somebody from this section.
To be fair, Madison
Send your
Edgewood
hate
did
mail to
win. To be
trasher@wisconsinpreparchy.net.
fair, Madison Edgewood did win the championship last year.
They did. Like they have all the players in the Madison area.
But I mean, you talked, a couple minutes ago about how you thought the DC Everest New Richmond game, Everest was uninspired. Everest beat Sun Prairie 2-1 2 weeks ago and outshot them 33-20. And I was at that game, and like I was excited to go watch Sun Prairie because they had what, like 2 losses on the season at that point. And I left that game kind of disappointed. I'm like, whether it was bus legs or something else, that was not the team I was hoping to see.
And
And now they've
that was the 7 seed in section one versus the 2 seed in this section.
Yep.
And I think when you look at the Madison area, I think what's happened is just the migration of all the city school kids to the suburbs. I mean, we went to, they've added so many different programs around the perimeter, in Madison, that I think that that has pulled kids out of those city schools, and that's happening, I think, in a lot of places, Twin Cities and wherever you want to go. But it's just, yeah, I think it's probably spread out the talent a little bit more than it was in the past, and yeah, it is kind of sad. I mean, Madison Memorial, I mean, for just decades was the absolute. Was them and Superior. I mean, it was those two teams, and then Madison West, Madison East were always very good. La Follette never probably achieved that status, but those three you could expect to see probably two of those in the state tournament a lot of years when back many years ago. But yeah, it is kind of unfortunate. On the girls' side, I think it's been part of that's been some pre. or some year-round AAA, AA, whatever, tier one programs that have taken a lot of the good girl players away from the Madison area. So it's just is what it is, I guess, at this point.
Yeah, I mean, like the East, La Follette, they haven't been good since Craig Smith left in 2006. He's a Detroit Red Wing.
Yeah, I can still remember, Jim Webster from Wausau or from Madison East had that great hat that he wore all the time. Like, yeah, him and Vic down there going at it year after year. I was some history of the state tournament there for sure.
Yeah, I mean, this year Sun Prairie and Monona Grove are up, and Middleton and Verona are down. You know, next year it might flip. Section four. Number one, University School, taking on number four, Kenosha. University School beat Marquette 6-1. Marquette beat Arrowhead 8-1. Kenosha beat Waukesha 4-3. And Waukesha had beaten Monroe 7-0. On the bottom half, Muskego takes on number two. Muskego takes on number three, Brookfield. Muskego beat Oregon 7-2. Oregon beat Janesville 5-1. Brookfield beat KMMO 6-3. KMMO beat the WNS Storm 1-0. And Brookfield actually had to do a, they didn't get a bye in this one. So as the three seed, they beat Beloit Memorial 13-1 in the regional semifinal. So that sets up number one versus number four and number two versus number three. Chalk.
Just as it should be.
Yeah, where did Muskego come from?
They've been good all year.
I know, but they weren't before.
They've been getting better over the years.
Yeah, they're my sleeper team. I'm kind of secretly rooting for them, so.
I mean, their name is going to change again soon because it changes every few years. Who gets to be the host of the Ice Force? But
But yeah, they did have a really good year. They did. Brookfield had a really good start to the year, kind of fell apart towards the middle and the end a little bit, but they've been very competitive all year. Kenosha is another team that, is normally not been in the conversation, I don't think, at this point in the season. So, and then University School, they're always there.
yeah, Muskego had 17 wins this year, 16 last year, 12 the year before, 11 the year before that. So they're
So
on their way
they
up.
have been building quietly without catching my attention.
Yes.
Okay. Sorry, Muskego. I say that a lot because I say dumb stuff.
I think University School is a weird team. I mean, you look at some of the score sheets that they've had this year, both big wins and big losses, and like the shot totals are all lopsided and weird, and it's really hard to get like a handle on like who they are as a team. And then our chance to see them got canceled by weather.
Oh yes, we were
When the
supposed to see them
Pines
at the
Classic
North
got
or at
canceled.
the Northland Pines Classic 30th edition this year.
Yeah, I mean, their losses have all been to really good programs. I mean, they lost to West, Spash twice actually, lost to Notre Dame. They got a 3-0 loss to Chippewa at the end of the year, which was probably a little unexpected, but yeah, I mean, most of the teams that they have beaten them have been good. The loss to West was by a goal, Brookfield by a goal. So, yeah, they've
That
been.
loss to West was one of the ones I was talking about. They lost 2-1. They outshot West 55-30 in that game. Mean, Julian Scalcucci is good, but come on. If you're going to put 55 shots on the goal, some of them have to go in. Their loss to Brookfield was 2-1. A university school outshot them 40-22. Even their 6-1 loss to Spash, university school put 32 pucks on net. It's just that none of them went in. Their second loss to Spash, 3-1. University school outshot them 47-25. Once again, one goal. It's like, I don't know what's going on with their game plan, but they throw a lot of pucks at the net and not a lot of them go in.
So they don't have finishers.
They do
That's
not.
a weird talent. I mean, some players just know how to put the puck in the net. All you have to do is get them in front of the net, get the puck to them, and they'll put it in. And some guys can do everything on the ice, come down, and then, hand the puck to the goalie.
Yeah, like even in that 3-0 loss to Chippewa Falls, the February 7th, university school put 47 shots on net. It's like they turn every goalie they play into like an award winner.
Well, they better get that figured out, or they're maybe gonna be going home.
Because yeah, I mean it's at this point it's like noticeable. So many games where they've put 40 plus shots on net and they're scoring 0 goals or one. I don't know if it's a game plan thing. Just their coach says throw the puck at the net and crash, and they're not crashing right or what. But yeah, they're not getting pucks in the net.
That stuff tends to also even out over the course of a season, so they may be in store for a windfall of goals here coming up.
It could be. I mean, right now their shooting percentage on the season is 9.4%.
Yeah, so
So,
they're not in a conference, so they play whoever they can schedule. So they really have nothing to shoot for during the regular season except, to get a high seed. And now if maybe the whole maybe they just use the whole season to set it up for now.
yeah, I mean their opponents have a 906 save percentage against them.
Yeah, well, that's the standard, really. I mean, I was
Right,
told
but if you're a number one seed,
you should be
you
higher.
should be scoring above a 10% clip.
So they probably got some coming, but maybe they're not. Maybe they're just in a division where they're the number one, but we'll see. Because yeah, I mean, I always subscribe to the theory of, we're out shooting a team 30-10 and we got one goal. I'm like, we're gonna get two goals here pretty quick, because it's just that's a law of averages. So keep shooting. That's all you can do.
I mean, throw the puck at the net and good things will happen.
You miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
I know, but I've heard all those, and I believe in some of them a little bit, but I tell you what, the games I watched this year, 80% of the shots go in the goalie's stomach. And I just
Yep.
You give those kids that same shot in warm up, and they're clinking them off the crossbar, and they're just hitting corners right and left. You put them in a game, and it's right in the stomach.
I did something with one of my squirt goalie last night at practice where we were doing a drill and he wasn't getting his right leg pad all the way down. So pucks were sneaking under his leg. And it's been happening a lot the last couple of weeks. I'm like, here, just get in your butterfly and don't move. And we continued the drill. And the next, I think it was 9 shots in a row, hit him in the leg pads. He didn't move. He got in his butterfly. The players could see him coming. He just sat there, and the next 9 shots hit him. I'm like, yeah, people don't know how to shoot. To compare, Spash's shooting percentage this year is 17.6%, which is a lot higher than 9.4.
I think that's the basics of goaltending, right? Is you I had to teach a girl how to play goalie when I went to Waupaca, and she'd never played before. And I just said, "We number one is you got to be in the right spot." And I was like, "If you just shuffle around here, stay in front of the puck," I said, "9 out of every 10 shots will hit you. You just got to figure out how to stop that other one, because they're going to
Yeah,
pick a corner
when
once in a while."
I remember when Bob was my son Bill's brother Bob was a goalie, and they had just gotten finished playing. I think it was Mosinee, maybe it was in a Pee Wee and at our rink. And as I was out in the lobby, I heard a couple of the Mosinee dads walk out saying, "You know, we just spent the whole game shooting the pucks right into that goalie's chest." And I'm thinking, Bob worked his ass off to make sure that every puck hit him in the chest. Didn't shoot at his chest. He got himself in front and positioned himself so that every puck hit him in the chest. I mean, it's not always the shooters. Sometimes the goalies do it
Yeah, no,
too.
I mean they're in the right spot, but yeah, it's I don't know how that puck always winds up there, but more often than I feel like it should.
All right, that is it for sectional previews. Anything else you gentlemen want to say today?
Good luck to all the teams, and if you lose, don't throw your stick into the crowd, I guess. I saw that happen.
I thought.
But,
Oh, I saw that too.
yeah.
Yeah. Not good. Don't be that guy.
Maybe that kid obviously didn't hear what you had to say last week. So,
Don't be a knucklehead.
yeah, that's the kind of stuff that we don't need for sure.
Right. And as great a season as he had, he will be remembered for throwing his stick into the crowd at the end of the game. All
Probably.
the other things he did eventually will be forgotten. He'll be remembered for throwing the stick into the crowd after the game.
And
Don't
not
be that guy.
not throwing a stick in the crowd in a good way, like, "Hey, here's a souvenir. I just
Yeah.
scored the overtime game winner."
Yeah. Yep. All right. For Dan Bauer and Bill Berg, I am Bill Berg Jr. You've been listening to This Week in Wisconsin Prep Hockey.